Well, welcome back to another episode. And we are already on our third episode of Label Review.
Right.
And I know I said this last time, but I really do love doing these because we are learning and teaching people so much about brands and the claims that they have on outside the packaging, but also what's within the packaging. And we are going to be talking about in this episode, Hill's prescription diet. And if you're not familiar with that, we'll kind of go into what exactly that means. But it's Hill's prescription diet WD, and the full name is WD multi benefit. So we'll go through on, what is Hill's on their literature, all the what that multi benefit means. And it's the number one, it's the top brand and the the line of products and Hill's prescribed for dogs with diabetes.
Right.
So that is, we'll talk more about my own story with my dog Maddie. If you're a new listener, I have two small dogs. We always joke, I have the small dogs, Dan has the big dogs, but Maddie has had diabetes for 2 years and it's been a roller coaster. And she was on Hill's for a good couple of years of that management. So,
Which means that this is like the first label review that we've done for a product that one of us has actually fed to our dogs. It's like, we've done label reviews of other products, and there's plenty of
yes.
interesting things I think to say about their labels. But in this case, we've got one that one of us actually used, has personal experience with, that's like really relevant to the stuff that's on the label, to like how the product is put in front of consumers, marketed to consumers. So it's a unique thing for us. It's really cool.
Yeah, we always focus on facts. And again, I'll talk about my personal experience, but it's not a, formal feeding trial or anything scientific. But I think it is important to talk about a personal experience that a person has had, especially with a long-term feeding. And yeah, I mean, we usually go out to the store online and buy the food that we're reviewing, and so we can have an on-hand experience. And first thing I said to you was, yeah, I still have, a bag of Hill's WD in our storage closet because
I actually have some too. I have
yeah.
some, and because we're using it, there's a try like a study that's being performed as we speak right now at the University of Guelph, where they're comparing in a variety of ways this product against a Ketona product and against something else, like a kind of
Oh,
just
okay.
label thing in a
Yeah.
variety of ways. Like I actually have some in my house too, because I was using it for those purposes.
Yeah, it's a very, I think a very common food when we switch, even when we switch vets with my dog, we were like, oh, she's on WD. I mean, they all have it in stock. It's Hill's is a huge, we talk about big kibble. Hill's is a top brand. It's a very well-known brand. So I think this is gonna hit home to a lot of people. So we again
Your
are
dog has diabetes. It's like there are kind
yes.
of two foods that are recommended by that are available with a prescription if your dog has diabetes. It's like a food that'll help with
Yep.
that diabetes, and it's this product, this Hill's product, and then a Royal Canin product called GlycoBalance.
Yep,
And
I've heard
those
of
are the
that.
two that are like for that purpose. And we're going to get into, it's not going to be, this is not rocket science, but we are going to get into some legal stuff today about what you're allowed to market as be how you can market something as being a treatment for diseases, food
Yep.
products, dog food products as a treatment for diseases, what you have to do in order to do that. But yeah, basically those are the two. So if you're listening to the show, your dog has diabetes, the odds are super good that at one point or another in your dealing with that disease, you've fed either Hill's WD or Royal Canin GlycoBalance for sure. And I'm sure we'll do Royal Canin GlycoBalance in a future episode of the show.
Yeah, diabetes is such a growing disease in the
Yep.
dog population, and it's almost common to the point where it is kind of an everyday conversation, which is very odd to me. Where I'll be talking with a friend. Oh yeah, my dog's on has diabetes, is on insulin. What dog, insulin is your dog on? And it's like it kind of it still takes me aback. But I think we should start there, really, of just like let's talk about diabetes because
Yeah.
that is spilling over into, well, how is Hill saying that this is helping to treat diabetes and glucose management? So, yeah, let's kind of start there. Like, what is diabetes?
Okay, so diabetes at, and I think there are definitely other shows we've already done that are relevant to this topic as well. But we'll try to do the, like the nutshell version of what is diabetes in your dog. It's a disease where your dog can't process glucose as well as it ought to be able to. So glucose is a substance, nutritional substance, that is found in your body in abundant quantities and your dog's body in abundant quantities. And it is present in some amount all the time. If there's no glucose in your dog's bloodstream, that's a real big problem. But equally big is the problem if your dog has too much glucose in the bloodstream. There needs to be a specific, like it needs to be within a specific range, or else not like chronic disease risk goes up, like, oh, some wooey, like very severe acute toxicity, death type things, coma type things happen if you go into what's called hyperglycemia, if you have too much glucose in the blood, or hypoglycemia, which is too little glucose in the blood. So if your dog's body is functioning normally, it can deal with fluctuating levels of glucose really well. What it does is it produces a hormone that basically gets things back to normal. The hormone is called insulin. And what insulin does is it set, like when your dog's body senses that there's too much glucose in the bloodstream, it produces insulin, and insulin essentially is the antidote to like high levels of glucose. It makes the glucose, takes it out of the bloodstream and puts it other places where your dog's body can like manage it safely. And so that's, there's this constant fluctuation going on where glucose levels go up, insulin, more insulin is secreted, insulin levels get higher, brings the glucose levels down, insulin levels come down in reaction to it. It's just this ongoing cycle in a healthy dog. In a dog with diabetes, the dog can't produce enough insulin on its own to manage its glucose effectively. So in a diabetic dog's case, the glucose level in the blood comes up, insulin level tries to rise to meet it, but can't do it on its own. And so you wind up, if you don't do anything about it, you wind up with a dog that gets hyperglycemic. And that's really, really bad. You can have really severe problems very quickly. So the only other thing to note about this as a disease is what causes fluctuations in blood glucose. Like in order to treat this disease and manage this disease appropriately, you have to be able to understand what makes blood glucose go up or down other than insulin. Mm-hmm. And the key thing, there are other things that impact glucose levels to some degree, but the by and large, like the whole thing is basically how much glucose is the animal eating. Like where glucose primarily comes from, where you get big shots of glucose into the blood, is after a glucose-rich meal. You eat a lot of sugar. Like think it. If anyone that's listening to this has experience with diabetes in themselves, their own case, or a family member, a non-canine family member's case, you know all this stuff too. It's like there are certain food products that if you eat, you know are going to drive your glucose up. And it's the ones that have a lot of glucose in them, which most obviously means very sugary things. Glucose is sugar. So if you drink a Coca-Cola, a big gulp size Coca-Cola, your blood sugar is going to rapidly increase. But what's somewhat less well, like it's not really even like not well appreciated. Everybody seems to get this on some level. And it's why the way that like the veterinary community manages diabetes is so insane. But glucose is not just sugar. It's all carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. Carbohydrate is glucose. Complex carbs are a long chain of a lot of glucose molecules. Simple carbs are just a couple glucose molecules, but all of them are made up of glucose. That's what it is. So if you eat a carbohydrate-rich meal, even if it doesn't have a lot of sugar and it's all complex carbohydrates, that is a ton of glucose that finds its way into the bloodstream as that meal is digested. Right. It doesn't go into the bloodstream as complex carbs. It all goes into the bloodstream is exactly the same thing, which is glucose. It gets broken down from the complex long chains into single glucose molecules during digestion and goes into the bloodstream as glucose. So the number one thing, of course, that drives a dog's blood glucose levels up is a carbohydrate-rich meal. If you feed the animal food, but not glucose, you have a far less significant reaction. And this is like incredibly well established in the literature. This is not a controversial point. This is something that's well understood by anyone that has taken a 101 level physiology course. So it's like, you're talking about that's the elephant in the room is how much carbohydrate is in the meal. And so that's how diabetes works.
Yeah. And it very much is appreciated to kind of get a refresher course. And I remember my vet trying to like fit it all in within like a 2 minute, episode of like, your dog has diabetes, here's what it means. And it is a lot to like understand where I have, I even have family members that have diabetes and I didn't even understand the physiology is the same in your dog. Like carbohydrates, glucose goes into body, the insulin, all of that works the same.
Very, very, very similar.
Yeah, it's very much like, so it's like a good refresher to be like, okay, here's what diabetes is and how it works within the body, because it is very, it is the same physiology within the human body. And
like treatment, you get into like treatment side, it's like basically that they're conceptually speaking, there are two ways that you can kind of treat diabetes. Diabetes is a body's inability to process glucose effectively because it doesn't produce enough insulin. So you can either, number one, keep the glucose levels lower, so you need less insulin to bring them back down to earth.
Right.
Or number two, you can supply more insulin than the dog can produce on its own. And that's the same, you think about this, this happens with human beings as well, right, that are trying to treat diabetes. You take it via injection, insulin. And so this is like you've gone through this treating body, right? Like you guys do insulin shots, right?
Yeah, we still do. And looking back on her diagnosis, it was overnight. Like we brought her in, she was very sick. We're like, here are her symptoms. And, after some blood work and them looking into after a couple different things, because she also had pancreatitis. So we were kind of battling of that of like, oh my gosh, did she get too much fat? Like what's going on with her maybe she got into something, but no, it was her body literally breaking down. And it was a jump to, she now has to be on insulin. She now has diabetes. There was no mediation. And the reason why I say that, I think about like when I had gestational diabetes, so I had a twin pregnancy. So already my risk level was so high up there. But I did not have to go on insulin because it was diet managed. It was a very much like, we are going to work with you. We are going to, monitor what you eat. You're going to take your blood sugar, morning, after meals, things like that. And I didn't even get a chance to do that with Maddie. It was like, she is so sick that she has to, like, we're going to keep her on the same food. We're going to pump her full of Vetsulin. And it was just like, it was very scary. It was not a, here's where she's going. Her blood sugars are unstable. Like, let's kind of look at maybe like these three causes. It was a very, and I feel like a lot of people have that shared experience. Yeah, she's still on, insulin, but her insulin has dramatically dropped since we.
Yeah, that's where I'm going with this. Yeah. It's like, basically like, you as an owner that's trying to manage your dog's diabetes basically have to get pretty expert in understanding how much insulin to give the dog, because insulin can kill you and can kill your dog. You can overdose on insulin.
He's only 10 pounds.
Yeah. And so you have to buy this stuff.
Yes.
Right. And so if the more you use, the more you have to pay for. But it's also like you don't overuse this or you have problems. Yeah. And so it's like second nature to you now, but it's as somebody whose dog doesn't have this and any listeners are like that, it's hard to imagine how much work is involved. Like you got to take your dog's blood sugar levels. You got to pull blood out of your dog, subject the blood to some kind of analysis so that you can find out how much glucose is in there at any given time. Make a determination of what that means in terms of how much insulin to give the dog, inject insulin into the dog. Like it's not a small deal to manage for a disease that a lot of folks think impacts at least 1 million dogs in the United States right now. So like, Yeah, if you don't have it, it's easy to underappreciate how big a deal it is.
Yes, and it's not just like, oh, you know, taking her blood. I mean, we have to do every now and again blood sugar curves, which is a whole day experience of 2 to 3 hours pulling blood from her. I mean, we're talking from the moment she wakes up to the, you know, even after she goes to bed, I'm like waking her up to take her blood sugar to make sure.
Is it the ear?
We do the inside of her mouth. We found, so that's another interesting point, just a side note as like a diabetic dog mama, was sometimes with paw, depending on like the depth of penetration, where you're taking it on the body, we were getting inaccurate readings from her ears, her paws, and the only stable readings we were getting was inside her mouth. So we do take it from her gum, is our personal experience, but
yeah,
it's what works for her.
I've written about this a fair amount, how like humans with diabetes have recently benefited from a bit of a technological revolution. It used to be not very long ago at all that same process essentially was what you had to do to draw your own blood and figure out how much insulin you needed to give yourself. Mm-hmm. But now there's a class of new-ish devices that are continuous glucose monitors.
Yes.
So they live on the body. You stick them on. They've got these really tiny needles that get beneath the skin and into the blood, painless. And they just consistently all day are spitting out a reading of the, you know, they're taking it every 60 seconds or whatever and digitally submitting it. They don't work great for dogs yet. Like they have been to a very limited extent, like trialed in that way, utilized in that way. And some people would make the case that like, yeah, I know how to do this well enough where I can use this with my dog. I've not had that experience. I've found them to be pretty difficult still. Like you're like repurposing a human use one for a dog. So you got to like shave the hair off so that you can get the thing to stick. And there's just a bunch of stuff like that. Convert the reading. But yeah, it's getting there. And I have no doubt, because I've looked at doing it as a matter of business, that within 10 years, that's going to be the norm, because diabetes is incredibly common in dogs. And it's such a big step forward. It makes life so much easier that you don't have to stick a needle in your dog.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. The diabetes management as a pet owner is extremely stressful, because not only are you worried about the actual, you know, the exact dosage of insulin, and also is the timing, like, oh my God, did she get her shot? Giving her over to someone else to take care of her. Did you get her shot? Like all of those things. But it's also, did she get the right amount of food? We have two dogs. We have to make sure monitoring she's not eating more food than she should, or eating the food off the other dog's plate. So it really, you know, the diet and what she's eating is such a huge part of it. And so that's why, like, kind of going back to that conversation in the vet's office, we did kind of breathe a sigh of relief when the vet said, well, you know, we put her on Hill's WD, which I'm like, I know this product inside and out. And for her pancreatitis, because of the low fat content, she did very well, as in she did not have any pancreatitis episodes. And then the vet said, well, you know, to make sure she has a nice long lifespan and to get her blood sugars where they need to be, she's going to continue on WD. And we just kind of took it as is, like, of course, that would make sense. Like, she's on this for pancreatitis, and we're just going to roll it over into diabetes management. Right. So she was on Hill's for a good year and a half before we switched her off of it. And it was an absolute nightmare in terms of her blood sugar numbers. So she didn't have any other like digestive issues or anything else, because she had been on it for quite a while before that. And it was all the, you know, vet conversations were, okay, lower her intake of food by like, we were going by like tablespoons at that point.
Yeah, tiny. Tiny, right?
It's 9.5 pounds, cool. Right? So like take a tablespoon of food out, increase insulin by 0.25 units. Try this for and it would be like a couple of weeks trial of that. Things weren't working. Okay, now we're going to like increase our food and like increase insulin. And it was just a night. It was a roller coaster. And she was labeled as a quote difficult dog. And that's hard to swallow as a pet parent too, of like, why is my dog different than any other dog with diabetes? until we switched her off into a different food that was, you know, low in carbohydrates as well as some other nutritional value, and her blood sugars have stabilized. And we're down to like 2 units of insulin, which she hasn't been on in a long time. And so it's just been, so that's kind of just my own personal experience where the only change, it wasn't like, let's try a different food. Let's see what she's eating. Let's see like what's going in. How is that affecting her blood sugar? It was like, let's tweak what she's eating by these microscopic amounts.
Yeah. I mean, and so I think that part of the reason the experience that is really, there are only these two food product, dog food products that are marketed to vets as being treatment for metabolic conditions like diabetes that involve glucose management. And so basically, and they're like similar in a lot of ways, these two, GlycoBalance and this Hill's WD. And so if you're a vet and you think that part of how to help your patient manage their dog's glucose, their diabetes, is to use a dietary intervention, you got two prescription ones to choose from that are like, I mean, I don't know, you're generalizing and speculative to say like, of course, vets are going to opt for the prescription only claims because that's like prescription strength versus over the counter strength, which is not as strong. But I think what basically where we need to take this podcast now is to talk a little bit about how pet foods that are marketed to vets as treatments for specific diseases, how those products are regulated because they're regulated somewhat differently. Than products that are available without a vet prescription. And it's super relevant to like understanding why these products A are so popular, B, why what you see on the label is what it is, and C, kind of what is so wrong in the system overall, having a system where this is the product that is the standard of care for this disease.
I agree. And I think it's important to note when we say prescription only, we are literally talking about this is a product you cannot find at a pet store. This is not something you go walk into Petco, you grab a bag and you walk out. This is you buy it from you get a prescription from your vet and you purchase it from a vet's office.
That's right. And so it's like I think that it makes the most sense to talk about like how the regulations work and then pull up the label so we can walk through it with everybody and show you the specific claims and highlight like, you know, talk about, see, this is an example of what we're talking about.
I agree. That sounds perfect.
All right. So basically here's where you start from. There's two categories of consumable pet products that are regulated by the government in the United States. One is food. The other is drugs. Okay. Drugs is a broader definition than the common like understanding of the word. It's anything that is being marketed as a treatment or something that helps to prevent a disease. So if you are in any way going to make a dog consumable product that you're saying is going to help treat or prevent any disease, it counts as a drug in the eyes of the regulators, which is the FDA. Okay. If you want to sell a drug for dogs or people in the United States, you go through a massive process. It involves a ton of legal work, scientific work, and a timeline that involves years. It's like it's just a big, big process. There are whole law firms that do just this for big drug companies. And basically, if you're going to do it, it is very difficult to create a startup pet food brand that's going to basically make FDA qualifying drugs. That's just like, in order to do that is a huge amount of work that's required. However, in recognition of that, the FDA created basically like a little exception to this broad rule. Usually you have food on the one hand, you have drugs on the other hand. If you're going to make drugs, you got to go through this massive process. But the FDA said, look, in the case of dog food products, there are these like, there's a class that's like, it's a drug and it's food. It's like you could feed this to a dog. It's going to meet all of its nutritional requirements, But also the manufacturer says it can help with these diseases. It can help to treat or prevent a disease. And those class of products, like, okay, we're not going to subject those to the same massive preclearance drug process. So they created this special exception. And we'll have a link to the relevant regulations in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there you go. This is the meat of it. This is like basically how this exception works. What the FDA said is like, okay, look, if you're going to make a dog food product that is also going to be marketed to some degree as a treatment or prevention of disease, you don't have to go through the whole big years long process. Mm-hmm. As long as you do a few of these things, if you do these few things, we won't come after you. It's technically still going to be a violation of the law, but we're not going to enforce the law. It's a non-enforcement policy. We won't come after you.
Yeah. Okay.
Here are the key things there. You got some of the key ones highlighted here. Number one, product can only be available with a veterinarian's prescription. Okay. Number two, the label itself doesn't include disease claims. So between those two things together, you can't have like a consumer like you and I, who are not veterinarians, pick up the bag and go, well, this looks like a good thing to me for diabetes. Because it says right here on the bag, cures diabetes. You can't do that.
Yeah.
The label can't have anything. And so when we go into the WD label specifically, we'll explain, we'll walk through this. But basically, you fall into this exception if, number one, the label doesn't say anything about treatment or prevention of diseases. And number two, only available with the vet's prescriptions. You can't get this product just by going into Petco. And number three, to the extent that there are communications, marketing communications made that this is a product for treatment or prevention of disease, it goes only to veterinarians, only to the veterinarians. And so what the FDA is essentially saying is, we're going to trust the vets on this one. Like, as long as the company that makes the food is only marketing to vets and not to consumers about the disease benefits of the product. And as long as a vet has to sign off, we're going to trust that that vet is scientifically literate and discerning enough to digest the marketing materials that are made available to them, prescribe the product if it's appropriate for the client, and not if otherwise.
Yeah. And actually, two pages before this, I won't scroll up because this is such a good list, but it gives an exact example of what you're just talking about, of like, they do not want customers going in and saying, oh, it's glucose management, and then going home and not giving their dog insulin. Like, they need to have that say, this is to help manage blood sugar levels like this, but insulin is the primary prescription.
Exactly. And so it is an area that any advanced like culture needs to regulate. You can't just give, in my belief, you can't give companies, manufacturers, carte blanche to create products that market straight to non-expert folks about diseases. You can't say this is Dan's AIDS cure, Dan's COVID cure, and I just go buy it expecting that to happen, and then I end up getting sick anyway, dying anyway, dumping a bunch of money into it. You have to have doctors and other medical professionals serving as intermediaries. And that's kind of the way this regulation works.
Right.
And Hill's WD is a product that is being allowed to be sold by the FDA, there's no enforcement action against them, as far as I'm aware, because it complies with this regulation. They haven't gone through the new drug approval process, which you would have to go through if you created a cure for cancer. They're going through this. They're complying with this stuff. And so FDA isn't coming after them. And so if we go down the list of the three most important ones, number one, this product is only available through veterinarians. Like you said before, this is part of a line of Hill's products that's prescription only.
Yep.
Hill's kind of has two main product lines. They have what they call their Science Diet product line, which is stuff you can get in the pet store, you yourself without a veterinarian. And then they have what they call their prescription diet line. And that stuff that intuitively enough is only available with a vet's prescription. And the WD is one of those, okay? Number two, the labeling, what the consumer actually sees, not the vet, but the consumer actually sees, can't include disease treatment or prevention claims. So let's take a look at the label of a Hill's WD dry dog food product. I don't know if you have like either a, I know you have like a personal bag, but we could also pull up.
Yeah. Let's actually look at the website and the packaging. Yep.
Yeah. So what you have here is language that is suggestive of relationship with disease, but not specific cure or prevention claims, right? Mm-hmm. So
yes, and they recently went through a redesign. That was something I noticed too.
Yeah.
As an observational point, because my bag, which is, she's been off of it for like 9 months now, but it has, you know, the prescription diet, but they did have like digestive, weight, glucose, bladder, like right on the front.
What I've got here, and we're going to get to the significance of this in like, in a minute, but this is, I think, from 2016. This was like a Hill's marketing product from 2016. And the WD formula as of that point actually includes the word diabetes on there. It's the diabetic formula, low fat, diabetic, gastrointestinal. So, you can see that they're right on the boundary line of these regulations, and they're being reactive probably to FDA communications or whatever. But what you do see now is language that's suggestive of a relationship with disease, but not explicitly about treatment or prevention. And specifically, correct, what I'm referring to is in the middle here, the like one description of the product section, it says clinically tested nutrition formulated for multiple benefits, digestive health, weight management, blood sugar management, and urinary health. Now, those, what you're not seeing there, the other way they could have framed this, the more forceful, direct way that you could do, but would be in violation of the FDA's rules, is you would say clinically tested nutrition formulated for multiple benefits prevents indigestion, prevents or cures obesity, or helps prevent obesity, helps prevent diabetes. You don't have that here because it's not allowed under the regulation that we just went through. So instead, you have reference to management of these condition, of these like aspects of physiology that are the core of the disease. So weight management is not a disease. Obesity is a disease that has to do with weight. So I can say weight management and not be talking about disease. Similarly, diabetes. It's a disease of blood sugar, essentially, but blood sugar management is not a way of saying treatment of obesity or prevention of obesity, but it's a strong implication. It's enough where if you're a pet owner and your vet has recommended this, prescribed this for your dog with diabetes, that's an echo, that language echoes that same like recommendation basically.
Right. And there are additional marketing materials here in like this image gallery. They use the verb help, you know, help maintain lean muscle, helps manage blood sugar. Correct. They're not right going as so far as like we are curing it. We do lower blood sugar. We
absolutely
do make your dog lose weight. So yeah, that's a really good point.
Okay. So those are the first two of our three key variables where the FDA says, okay, we'll allow you to do this. One, you can see it's prescription only. Number two, the label itself doesn't make claims about, it's just this annoying corporate speak, multi-benefit WD. It's just
right.
But the third is disease-specific claims are made only to veterinarians with appropriate scientific support. And this is kind of the crux of the issue, right? Like, at least in the FDA's eyes, this is really important, right? You can't give just the vet license to prescribe anything and whatever. It's like you have to trust that the veterinarian is going to get information upon which they can exert their influence, figure out whether it's a good fit for their patient, and prescribe it if appropriate, right? And so what you have to then go look at, the third thing to look at here, the third part of our conversation, is what are the vets being told by the manufacturer? Because it's going to be different. They're getting some type of marketing material that the consumer doesn't get, because the FDA says, consumer, you can't have that. Like, we're not
I was going to say, this is a very important point. This is something that is not available online. This is something that is not, right, it's not a brochure. It's not anything available to us as consumers. This is for vet eyes only.
And this is what Jen has pulled up on the screens. This is more than any episode we've probably ever done. This is one where you got to watch the video because there's a lot of like.
Yeah, so we'll make sure to link it in the show notes. Yep.
Yeah. But what this is, I'm holding it up right now, is this big pamphlet, hundreds of pages, that's entitled Hill's Keys to Clinical Nutrition. And I was given this at a Hill's continuing education program that was put on for veterinary professionals while I was doing the research that would go into the book that I wrote. And so this is not something that was produced this year. This would have been like 2016. Mm-hmm. That I know, you know, dozens of veterinarians. And I promise you that every day of the calendar in the United States, there is a version of this being handed out to a veterinarian by somebody from Hill's in this day and age, to this day. This is the 2016 version, but the concept is the same. This is something that Hill's uses to tell veterinarians about their prescription diet line. And these are the benefits of it. These are the specs, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And as you'd imagine, it's produced by somebody who's trying to sell the product. It's got a Hill's favorable spin on it. But that's, you know, like, of course it's going to. But like, what we're going to drill into here is like, what are the marketing claims that are made here that are not being made to consumers? Because these are where the meat should be found, right? Like, if mm-hmm. there's a vet recommending this product for a dog with diabetes, it should be because these materials help them to reach that conclusion. And so they're kind of like, you know, this is a multi-benefit product. And so you've got a bit of like kind of material. There are two pages, or maybe a little bit more, maybe three in my version where I've got material about this specific product as opposed to some other Hill's product. Sure. Mm-hmm. But the main things to call attention to are kind of two things. One is there is a description of, and this is actually on the second page of this.
Okay.
There's a, here you've got kind of feeding amounts and what they ingredients and key benefits. Okay. And the key benefits is where the rubber meets the road when it comes to our analysis today, because you can see that we've got disease claims here, right? Yeah. I've got explicit reference to diseases, including constipation, colitis, diabetes, weight management, instead of obesity there, but they weight management, but diabetes. And it says, helps minimize blood glucose fluctuation, which may reduce insulin dosage. So if we recall back to how diabetes works, that makes all the sense in the world, right? We know that it's a disease of inability to manage glucose. And so if I'm going to reduce glucose fluctuation, that's a good thing. That means I'm going to need less exogenous insulin, and my dog's diabetic condition is going to be less significant for the dog. And where this is highlighted in the Hill's materials is under the heading of fiber. Fiber increased means diabetes helps minimize blood glucose fluctuation, which may reduce insulin dosage. And they are totally right.
Mm-hmm.
Totally right.
Exactly what the vet told me.
Yes. The case that all else being equal, if you add fiber to a dog's food product, and again, all else being equal, the food product is otherwise exactly the same. The dietary regimen is otherwise exactly the same. And you add some degree of insoluble fiber, their blood glucose will fluctuate less violently. That is demonstrated in literature. This is a factually true statement, but it is super misleading. Super misleading. And the reason that it's super misleading is that the extent to which adding fiber helps to reduce violent blood sugar fluctuations is tiny, in comparison to a much more direct and profound way to reduce blood sugar fluctuations using diet, which is just to take the sugar out of the diet. So the study showed that basically you add a little bit of fiber to food and you'll tend to get somewhat less reduced, minimized blood sugar spikes. And the reason for that is that fiber basically slows the digestion of glucose. You put it in there and you have your complex carbohydrate. When you introduce fiber into it as well, it takes longer to break it down into individual glucose molecules. And so less of it gets pushed, less glucose gets pushed into the bloodstream all at once. So fiber is a good thing. But just think about it for a second. This is better if you're dealing with a 40 or 50% carbohydrate product without fiber, or a 40 or 50% carbohydrate product that's got 5% insoluble fiber. Unquestionably, this will probably help to some degree to have the fiber. Mm-hmm. But the much more direct, significant, profound way to do it is to just take the glucose out altogether. And that's the real, that's what's such an outrage about this product. Jen, you can pull back up the current formulation and you can see the like nutrition data on this, on the current formulation right now. This is a product that is stuffed with carbohydrate. Let's see, 45%. What are the ingredients? Is it the first ingredient? Is the first ingredient some kind of, it's gotta be one of the first.
Whole grain wheat.
Okay.
Chicken is not until the third ingredient.
Yeah, it's insane.
Here's what's running through my mind. Like when you say this, it's like, it's saying the glucose that is coming into your dog's body because of the high carb content of most dog food, including this prescription diet that's prescribed for diabetes, is like a Mack truck that is going to hit your dog. Now, the fiber are the brakes on the Mack truck, which will help slow it.
Oh, I love the analogy.
Why does it have to be a Mack truck?
Why didn't you trial this analogy with me in our rehearsals? It's a great analogy. I love a good analogy.
Why does it have to be a Mack truck slamming your dog's body?
That's exactly right.
And shooting
up a blood sugar curve.
Like
you could just, and so by extension, if you take the analogy further, what if you just, took all the carbohydrate out of the product in the first place? Because as we've covered in a million shows at this point, carbohydrate is not an essential nutrient for dogs. They don't need it. Study after study has shown that you take it out of their diet altogether, nothing bad happens at all. The vast majority of their evolutionary heritage, they never ate it. Just over the past few, dozen generations, they've started consuming it, learning how to digest it. And now it's half the diet, even if your dog has an inability to digest it or to metabolize it. So what's the analogy is, why not trade the Mack truck, right, for a scooter? And it's so right on the money.
I feel
outraged on two levels, right? Yeah. I feel outraged on the level at Hill's, because to me, there's nobody that's making this product that doesn't know that this is like saying, just tap the brakes a little bit before the Mack truck hits your dog. They all get it. And they're selling it anyway. They know they could sell a product that was just the little bird scooter or whatever, the equivalent, but they don't. And that's outrageous. They should be calling attention to that. But I got to tell you, I'm just about as outraged at the veterinarians who, I mean, like this involves science, but it's not rocket science. This is not like, you don't need a PhD to understand why this logic doesn't hold up. You'll understand it just as well if you have a PhD or if you have a regular high school education. Mm-hmm. And yet this is a billion-dollar brand. This is one of two products, and they're both subject to all these same criticisms that are used as the standard of care for a dog with diabetes. You experienced it yourself.
Yeah.
And in that case, I'm not saying, the outrage is tempered a little bit, because I don't believe that a vet is knowingly doing that, is going like, I know this is going to hurt the dog, but I'm doing it anyway, which is
I think not malicious intent at all.
Right.
So.
But it's criminally negligent. I mean, not criminal. I got to be careful with my words. I mean that. I don't mean that literally. It's not literally criminal, but it is absurdly negligent, because like I said, the literature showing that taking the carbohydrate out of the diet altogether has a much more significant impact on blood glucose is undeniable and easy as pie to find. You search PubMed one time, you'll find all the studies. It's super easy. The other thing that is criminally negligent, again, figuratively speaking, not literally speaking, about how veterinarians are approaching the marketing material and translating that into prescriptions for this product is on the first page. Here you go. Exactly. So there's a section here. Let's scroll up a little bit that highlights the evidence-based clinical nutrition for this product. And what that is one statement with two citations. The nutrition of prescription WD canine is clinically proven for weight management in dogs prone to weight gain. That's it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, and there are two citations, the only scientific citations in the entire marketing thing. Okay. So right. The law is designed to be like, okay, look, you can market disease specific stuff, but it has to go directly to veterinarians so that they can be experts, judge this stuff and prescribe it if they think it's appropriate. Cool. Got it. You got two studies. Actually, you have one. You have two citations because one of them just says data on file, Hill's Pet Nutrition, Inc. Okay. So one of the 50% of the citations are to not a published study. This isn't a peer-reviewed piece of evidence. This is just Hill says they have it somewhere. And a vet was, you know, lots of vets are like, okay, that makes sense. And then the second is just as bad, basically. It's one study. Do you have a link to this? The PPE.
Yeah, let's pull up the actual study. And this is peer reviewed. This is published.
Right. Because it says some degree of scientific relevance. It just has nothing to do with the efficacy of this food as compared to other foods to treat any disease in dogs. Basically, what this is are people better at losing weight if they are trying to lose weight with their dog or not? You got a group of people. This is all summarized this abstract. You pull it up on the website and read it for yourself, but I think I'm describing it pretty faithfully. You've got a group of 50 or so people that have obesity and no dogs. You got another group that are 50 people that have obesity and have obese dogs also. And they get subjected to the same conditions and it's like, did either of them lose weight better? And I think basically the conclusion is they didn't, but that's not the point. The point is that like Hill's is using this as a citation for the fact that their food works as a weight management tool. This is not comparing Hill's product with any other product. I think it's not cited in the abstract here, but I presume that the Hill's diet is what was used for the dogs. Like they had the obese dogs that were right. Half the study and they were given, it says here, calorie restricted feeding with the prescription diet. So what happened in this case is the people that put together the study said, okay, here's these dogs. Let's figure out how many calories we need to feed them in order to get them to lose weight. And we'll feed them this diet. This is the prescription diet. And they did that. And the dogs, lo and behold, lost some weight. Like, okay, they did. You could have done the exact same thing with any dog food product. If you ahead of time go, okay, I'm going to calculate how many calories are in here. I can figure out if I feed the dog this many calories, how much weight it's going to lose.
Yeah, it's kind of a bare minimum exercise too. And they started off with, so there were two sets of participants, the first being an obese person with an obese pet, which is their PP group, as they called it, which was only 36 people to begin with, but only 61% of those 36 went to the end of the trial. So this whole study is based upon like what, like 17 people or something?
Yeah, and it doesn't even like that. You'll see that the actual, like the main point is this study wasn't looking at whether this product helps dogs lose weight. That's the key take home, but there's tons of absurdities. I mean, the absurdities are like, it didn't actually do what they were testing. Like, does a dog exercising as a person help the person lose weight more? Like, no is the answer.
No, basically. Yeah, very minimal.
But like, that's not even the point. The point is like how a veterinarian, I'm putting myself into somebody else's head here, but I you got to convince me that I'm not being reasonable in this. You don't see this, read that abstract, not even the study, just read the abstract and then go, okay, this supports the point they're trying to make here. There is no way that you do that. This does not in any way make the idea that this product helps with diabetes any bit more persuasive. It's not part of it. The only way you can assume that this material makes a vet more likely to prescribe this product for diabetes is if they don't read it at all. That's the only conceivable way. There's no way you can pull anything about diabetes out of that study. They don't look at diabetes in that study. They barely look at dogs.
Right.
Okay. So yeah. you there's an inescapable conclusion that what's going on here is vets get the pitch, get the material, don't look at the science, and then prescribe the product anyway. And right. that's why it's like so negligent. Like that's exactly what the law is designed not to. And so it's
a big responsibility for them to take on too, because not only are they prescribing the food, they are becoming then a distributors, right? So they're stocking the food for people to then come in to continue to feed the food to their dog. So it's just,
I'm not imputing malice to the vets in this case, but like, that's a soft factor. Like if a stream of income is reliant on you being negligent, you're going to be I believe it encourages you to be negligent. And who is selling the insulin? The veterinarian is selling the insulin.
Correct.
Who is selling this prescription only product? The veterinarian is selling the prescription only product. If you want to buy a non-prescription product without the marketing claim, you can go, there are plenty that you can buy that will do a better job, might I tell you, at preventing diabetes, managing your dog's diabetes without a prescription at the pet store.
Yeah.
But your vet doesn't get a cut of it.
Now, do you feel that the studies we just went through, flimsy or not, but do you feel that that's what they're using for this cornerstone marketing language of clinically tested? Because that's something they throw on website, packaging, all of that. You know, what, from your perspective, scientifically speaking, and being in the pet food manufacturing business, where do you kind of feel that they're positioning that around?
Well, I mean, there is the fact that this is a 4 or 5 year old thing, more than that, 5 or 6, whereas the clinically proven, clinically tested language is found on today's label.
Correct.
That said, if we break down the language, clinically tested, clinically proven, that clinical, in my judgment, is a buzzword for a consumer that has a general respect for the idea that science is helpful in disease, but doesn't really have a nuanced understanding of how food products are vetted through the scientific process. And so it's something, some kind of reference to veterinarians. It's basically saying, in some kind of way, this is a product that has been tested in a clinic. I mean, that's as much as I can say.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's sort of like saying, basically, there's no like, if it was tested, it's just such a general, like clinical is obviously a very general term. Tested is much more general. It's like, if you could say it's clinically tested for safety, which is to say it won't make your dog sick. You could say it's clinically tested for efficacy with regard to some specific application, diabetes, weight management, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't say that. And that's why it's like, it's really just the buzzword halo effect of that expression that I think is the reason that it's included on there. Because it's not, you can make, if somebody sued Hills and said, I think you're being misleading about use of the word clinically tested here, I predict that Hill's response to that would be like, our products are used in more veterinary clinics than any other product. That is clinical. That is testing. That is what we're doing. It'd be something to that effect.
Yeah. I mean, going back to even when we were going through that FDA regulation list, I mean, there are no certain buzzword, like there's nothing around you saying clinically tested and what that means. I mean, there's just no regulation to that point of that exact language or other language that makes it seem like it very medically necessary. Yeah, it kind of feels very clinical. Like
you could see, pull up the Hills, the website again that has the current label on it, because
I'm pretty sure this is something you can find. Like there's like stuff about veterinarian recommend or number one veterinary recommended. Like that's all, there you go. And I think at least it certainly used to say number one veterinary recommended. Maybe scroll down that page, like lower than not just the label itself.
Oh, there we go. Number one veterinarian recommended.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's a lot. I think if you were to put their feet to the fire on what they mean by clinically tested, it would be like that. We'd be like, we're the number one, more vets recommend our product than any other, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a reflection that reflects really poorly on the veterinary community, I think, because we're walking through the logic that they've got to use. There's no like piece to this that we're not looking at. This is just straightforward, and they're all fudging it up.
It kind of just feels like the toothpaste thing of like, you know, three out of whatever the now or whatever they use right now in their language or have always used Crest is like,
The Hills. Yeah. So for, I know we covered this in another episode, but basically Hills is owned by Colgate-Palmolive. Colgate-Palmolive makes Colgate toothpaste, and they got huge amount of success marketing Colgate toothpaste products through dentist offices. So they said, we're not going to market directly to teeth people. We're going to market to their dentists. And because we're going to rely on the theory that you don't make your own choice for, you don't actually evaluate the evidence when you're figuring out what toothpaste is best to keep your teeth clean. You just ask your dentist. Yeah. And they enjoyed huge success doing that, acquired Hills shortly thereafter. And there is very well reported. This is not a matter of like, I think this is what happened. This is all very well documented. Basically said, we're going to do this same exact thing that we did so well with toothpaste with pet food. And that's how they developed Hills into this huge prescription only line. Science Diet line rides on the prescription only line. Like the backbone of their business is selling through veterinarians. If they didn't do that, it would be a completely different business, and I don't think it would work. And so it's like, yeah, that they what they do really well, because they invest money in it and it's their strategy, is sell through a lot of veterinary offices. So you bet your ass they're the number one veterinarian recommended product by far.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's important to wrap this episode with, because this is a prescription diet and because this is highly recommended for diabetic dogs, please just don't go out and just stop feeding your dog this one day. Like, please continue to have that line of communication with your vet for your specific dog's health and well-being and all of that. We are just kind of walking through of these are the claims, but just opening that door, right, of like the actual science and what studies they're using and claiming and how glucose works and how diabetes works in your dog's body. So these are all things to bring awareness. And then you can then advocate for your dog.
Yeah, it's a super good point. I can really go to like, I can talk about this stuff, assuming that it's got an academic application. It's an application about the issues and not about real world application of how those issues are analyzed. I can go like tonally off on that. And you're exactly right. The like, you definitely should go talk to your veterinarian about the content of this podcast, as opposed to taking this content and acting on it in your product decisions, how you feed your dog, how much insulin, because you can screw that stuff up.
Yes.
And so talk to your veterinarian about it, but man, I encourage you to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how I feel this podcast is. Like, we want an open line of communication between, you know, what feedback do you, what topics do you want to see about diabetes? What feedback or topics do you want to see about like the veterinary community? What other brands, you know, we always say, reach out to us, and I'll have the email contact in the show notes of, we want to help educate you to open up those line communications with your vet too, of saying, hey, you know, because this is the podcast of facts. I heard this study, can we talk about it? Can we talk about how it applies to my dog? We should always advocate for our dogs, right? And we all want our dogs to live long, healthy lives. And, you know, this is just one way we're helping educate everyone is by looking at these big brands, small brands, whatever you guys want us to talk about. This was just such an important one because it is, it is the top prescribed one for diabetes, and diabetes is such a cornerstone of this podcast as well. So we hope you learned many things. I feel like we covered a lot. This was
I look forward to hearing the feedback on what people found useful, confusing, because there's like, we covered regulation and law and science and business. And so there's a lot covered there, and hopefully we get feedback. People need us to go deeper into elements of that or re-examine elements of that.
And I would presume that, you know, we will certainly have a very dedicated episode diabetes only, dedicated episode of obesity only. I mean, these are huge topics. We just can't cover it all. I mean, we would be here for 3 hours. We do try to keep these 45 minutes to an hour. So, well, anyway, thank you for listening. And until next time.
Bye, everybody.
See you again. All right. Bye.